This is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, February 14th, 2022, business session. And I would like to call this meeting to order. It is 6:03 p.m. All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Here.
Director Booth? Director Frumfeller?
Here.
Director Karcher?
Here.
Director Olson?
Here.
All right, would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we do not have an education showcase or recognitions for this meeting, so we'll go right to the approval of the agenda. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right, now I'd like to move to approval of minutes. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the BOE meeting, January 24th, 2022?
So moved. No move.
Okay. Kim?
I'm going to give Kim first and second.
Okay, second. All right. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
And approval of the minutes from the special Board of Education meeting January 31st, 2022.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Abstain.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Thank you. And we're going to move on to communications. And we've got Mr. Kim Schumann.
Yes. Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
I have three things for you tonight. And the first one is just an update. I've talked the last couple meetings about substitutes and difficulties with substitutes, with COVID and so forth. But we're starting to trend much more positively now with our substitute situations. And it's a combination of fewer employees, in fact, at some days, significantly fewer employees calling in sick, who are sick, which is a good sign, together with a number of new subs that we've hired at the same time, and then some of our other subs that weren't working before because of COVID are coming back. So this morning, I think we filled, 84%, Douglas, I think, I can't remember. Of our sub position, of our vacant positions with subs this morning, which is really, really good. And we only had 13, I think, people out in the entire district, and we've had as many as 26, 27 on a fairly ongoing basis at times. So the trend is positive, and that's really good. We hope that's continued, but it's really starting to show that it's becoming a trend. So I just wanted to update you on that.
Nice.
And then I wanted to talk about two items that are on your agenda tonight. The first one is on the consent agenda, and it's item 9.4, and I wanted to give you a little bit of information. I know that I included a short memo for you. We, several years ago as a district, incorporated a hard-to-fill, hard-to-retain stipend program for selected positions. At that point, we were looking at special ed teachers, special services providers, science teachers, possibly even math teachers at the time. And in order for us to stay competitive with other districts or to try to remain competitive, we put in this program where, and it's probably programs you've seen in your own businesses and your own industries and so forth, where we offer with certain positions a hard-to-fill stipend when they come in. It's in addition to their salary. And it has been helpful.
So a hiring bonus?
You can call it that. We don't call it that, but it's basically the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, and they're positions, like I said, that are hard to fill and hard to keep people in those positions. And, you know, we've talked about in other conversations about how the working world, and I know you've been involved in it a lot, how it's changing and how difficult it is. And you've heard the term the Great Resignation, and that's out there. And it's becoming tougher to attract and to hold on to people in certain positions. And so we have determined for certain very limited positions that our current $3,000 stipend limit, where it would not go above that, in certain limited situations, we'd like to have a little bit more leeway with those. And so and that's because we are competing now. Amazon's giving $3,000 stipends out to people, and we're competing with some of those companies and some of those other organizations out there. And so we need to stay up a little bit with them. And so we're asking for your approval to raise the maximum to $4,000 from $3,000. Now, as I said, we use these selectively and relatively rarely, but it has helped. It has helped attracting some of those people that I mentioned earlier in some of those positions. And so if you do approve this, I feel that we'll be able to stay up with other employers to some degree, and we'll be a little bit in a better position to bring on some people in some of these more specialized positions. So I wanted to explain a little bit more about that, why we're asking for it, okay? And I do, again, I'm kind of repeating myself, but we will be, as I said in my memo, very judicious in determining what positions get these types of stipends, and we have been in the past. So so that's, I just wanted to explain that a little bit to you. And before I go on to the next item, any questions about that at all?
How many of those do you think we have in a given year?
I would say right now our special ed teachers and our special services providers are the bulk of them, and I would say probably 15 or so. 15, maybe somewhere between 50 and 20. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then the other
thing that I wanted to say about it, that's because you brought up competing with others. It's not like we're directly competing with organizations. We're indirectly, as we try to attract employees, and their options are organizations. Pink Supers had their strike. They raised their pay. The pre-approval for the stipend allows primarily Ken, but also discussion sometimes with Ron and myself, in the negotiation and the offer to do it then, rather than, well, we'd like to make you this offer, but we have to wait 2 weeks and kind of bring it to the board, et cetera. And as you've told me, Carrie, I mean, I don't know if he's told you, but sometimes you can't even get people in
for the interview.
And then when they do come in, pun intended, he handcuffs them to the chair after making the offer while he does reference checks or whatever. Don't leave. But the point being that he makes the offer right then and there, not like we'll call you in a couple days. And that kind of flexibility is really important to be able, because as people are looking, they often have more than one option.
Yeah, that's happened several times where I waited to do the background check and waited a day or two until I finished other interviews, and I call them up. Oh, I'm so sorry, I accepted a position with another company.
Yeah.
Okay, so it did work. 2 weeks ago, I had two interviews in the same day and back to back, and I liked them both. I really liked them both, and I said, "Do you have a few minutes to just wait while I do your background check?" And so I called our HR person. I said, "Okay, do it quick." Got it. Went back in, made an offer, and it worked. So both of them. Yeah. Well, actually, I've done it three times now. So
Those checks take about 2 minutes.
Yeah. And yeah. So I mean, it's nothing to.
There's no point in this market of making them wait.
That's right. That's right. But there's a big risk if you do win it. And these positions, mm-hmm. the 15 that you're talking about, I think it's they're the types of positions that would happen to. Mm-hmm. Because they may not be looking for something that specific.
Right.
But if they get another offer, or if they're applying for other things, then if they don't show up for the interview, I send an email to the Department of Labor with their name and their contact information, and I tell them, I call them back and leave them a message that I just want to let you know you're a no-call, no-show, and so I
in case submitted your unemployment. Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's right, if they're trying to commit fraud.
Yeah. Yeah.
So none of them have called me back. So.
Thankfully. Like,
oh well,
the hairy guy over there.
Well, you have my sympathy with how difficult it is out there.
It's crazy.
That's tough. So, so I'll move on to the third item, and that's on your agenda. It's item 10.4, requests for retirement transition years. And for those of you that don't know much about what a transition or anything, perhaps, what a transition year is, I wanted to explain it just a little bit. So the PARA, our retirement plan for the district.
For the state.
Yeah, for the state and for us as a district. They have a provision in their rules. And our district has chosen to work with those rules in the past. And in our policy for transition years, it talks about employees that have been with the district for a long time, employees that have contributed great service to the district, and in recognition of their service to the district. And so what it allows an employee to do is to announce or to establish a retirement date, okay, like any of us would, okay, but the employee then has the opportunity to work an additional year as a retiree, okay, and they receive their regular pay and benefits, but they also, as a retiree, receive their monthly pension during that final year that they're working. And it's a real nice program for people who are in the PARA program. We're required as a district to approve requests for transition years, and that's why I have it before you tonight. And the two that I have before you tonight are a little bit different. It's basically the same concept, but it's a little bit different. And what you have to do as a retiree is after you've declared that you're going to be retiring, what you're basically saying is next year will be my last year, okay? And after you've declared your retirement, you request what's called a 110 transition year, 110-day transition year. Now, for example, our teachers, they work 182 days in a regular school year. So what they would do is, and their school year encompasses two separate calendar years. So for the first part of the school year, starting in August, they could work no more between August 1st and December 31st, no more than 110 days as in their transition year. They would then ask for we would then process a second transition year that starts January 1st until the end of the second semester, okay? Each of those are 110 days or less. If you exceed 110 days, it can impact your pension. So you have to be very, very careful about that. So in this item 10.4, you have somebody from the middle school who is going to be working. She's been with the middle school for 30 plus years, probably closer to 35 years, and she's going to work one more year after this school year as a retiree, okay? And does that all make sense to everybody? Okay. Now, the second one.
Before you go to the second one, I want to explain it because it's I want to explain it in a slightly different. It's the same as what Kim just said, but it's. I think it's important to understand that it's the state retirement system that has these rules. This is not a district program. This is a. It's the way that PARA, the Public Employees Retirement Association, works. Is that when you retire, you can't continue to work full time for a PARA-covered employer. Full time, but you can work part time for as long as you want. It just can't be more than half time. So many school districts, and we've had them, have PARA retirees working for us. It has to be half time or less. And this 110 program is that, but because it's the if they retire mid-year, they work the second half of 1 year of their, and then the first half of the next, so they're not working more than half time. It just happens to be it's a consecutive school year. They can't keep doing that because then they would work a whole year. But it's the same concept as a para retiree who works, they could work 10 years half time, or they could work every other day, they work in the mornings, or they could work a full school year, take a school year off, come back, work another school year, and that's all under the para system.
And all we have to do, it's really our choice as a district to participate in 110s. We're not required to do that. But we do it for our employees, and we are not. If an employee applies for a transition year, we do not, as a district, have to grant that. We don't have to grant it, but we do. In terms of the times I've been here, we've always granted them. But you never know when there might be a situation where we wouldn't grant one. So all we have to do is make sure that a parent knows that somebody's on a transition year.
How does that impact the districts, the district financially? So, you know, they start getting their retirement August of this year, mm-hmm. I guess, right? And so, how would that impact the district financially? We are still contributing to because they're still working on our payroll,
right?
Right.
And the employee is still, I believe, contributing
into
PARA during that transition year also. So I think from, and Ron, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it might be pretty close to a wash in terms of additional, no?
No, it is.
Yeah,
it is a wash.
Okay. Yeah, in terms of additional expenses by the district.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Because we're still paying in while that employee's working as a normal employee. You know,
they're doing their regular job.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're still getting value from them on them doing their job.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then anything else, Douglas? Okay. And then the second one is there are most of our employees work part of the year. They're off during the summer. Okay. There are employees, Ron and myself and others, that work year round. We work 260 days a year versus a teacher that works 182 or a para that works 170, okay? So what could happen is that if we want to do a transition year, we quite possibly on one of those half years would go over 110 days and it would impact our pension, that type of thing. So what para has allowed school districts to do is each calendar year they can designate up to 10 employees district wide that can do a 140 year rather than a 110. So, and you basically you're going to see people that work year round asking for a 140 year, and that's why these two are different. So, for example, I'm asking for a 140 year because I think I'm pretty sure I'm going to be working either the first or the second part of the year over 110 days. In fact, I think I counted them and it'd be 130 days. So you have to kind of protect yourself that way. And so that's why the numbers of days are different. So, and like I said, we have maybe two a year, maybe three on a normal year that will do a transition when they're planning on retiring. So it's not a large group of people that take advantage of this program during a particular year. So that's what this is all about. I just wanted to take a few minutes to explain it to you, see if anything's not clear, if you have any questions, anything like that, before you vote on these items. So,
So for those that didn't read their board deck, you're retiring? Then
I will be. I don't want to talk too much about myself, but I'm going to retire. I will be setting my retirement date as June 30th of this year. So I will work through June of 2023. So it's really about a year and a half for me that before I'm going to be gone. I want to stick around for a while. Any questions? Any other questions? I hope that was clear. And thank you for clarifying a couple things. I appreciate it. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, Lordy. Okay. All right, next on the agenda is communications agenda, is a discussion around the EHS proposed new courses for 2022 and 23, or some comments from Douglas on that, and from Brett. Hopefully.
Oh, of course.
Sorry.
I'm going to leave my phone out because Mary is at the basketball game. If she calls, I may have to run.
That's cool. Thank you for coming over.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
So, I think you all received the list of proposed courses. Brett was here, I guess it was 3 weeks ago, talking about them. There were some follow-up questions, which we've given our best answers to. So I think that the one course that there was a question about was the auto program. Greg had asked if there were resources for all of these, and my answer was that the auto program had capital needs and so forth, and that we were working on those. So for the past 3 weeks, we have been working on that. As you know, some capital allocation was put into the revised budget, and that was in case you did approve it tonight. And then there's been discussions also about staffing that position. And so the high school is ready to move forward with it. And Ken and Ron and I have talked, and we're in full support of it. We think that it's a great opportunity for kids, not just now, but we believe on an annual basis it will be well subscribed. And so the approval for all of these courses would go into the listing of what's offered at the high school when they provide students the chance to select their courses. And I don't know if Ron or Brett, if you wanted to say anything more about auto, or
not really. I just don't have anything to add to what I already talked about a couple of weeks ago. So,
I thought the course that we still had questions about was one of the alternative classes that we didn't have any information on.
Yeah, it's not on the list.
It's not on the list.
So that and that. That's. I didn't know that we just took it off, so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not ready.
Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't quite enough, and I think Brett, you talked to the teacher and you all kind of circled back, and we just weren't ready for that.
Right, we've got some planning that we want to do, and I mean, we like the concept, but how it plays out, we want to make sure we're ready to go for that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the goal is that you will see this again next year with a lot more detail as far as what this is going to look like. And so we'll be able to provide a lot more structure for you, if you will, at that time. That's the goal.
I think that's a critical part. So what other questions?
Can you just remind me what on the go, what
yes.
class that was? Just
yeah, that... Yeah. That is one of our alternative classes. It'll be team taught with Ms. Horton and with Mr. Payton. And it's basically a kind of a study of Colorado history.
Okay.
visiting a lot of areas in Colorado, a lot of places in the Denver metro area, just because we can do those in a day as opposed to, you know, going over to Ouray or Durango or something like that. But it's a focus on Colorado history, Colorado literature, and visiting the places where those happened.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Kim, did you have any questions for Brett? We've got his attention.
We're waiting.
You're on mute, too, so we can't hear you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions then for anything on the list? I know we've had discussions and conversations, but this is good. So good.
All right, really
Brett,
exciting.
Dang, that was, I think it is too. I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about the auto program and how important that is and how much those people that pursue that direction can make.
Oh, yeah.
And,
they'll make more than some of the people. Well, they'll make more than a lot of the people that are educating them in the core subject areas.
Right, yeah. right, exactly. So I think that's exciting. I love the way that we're moving forward on this stuff. So thank you very much, and thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I didn't know what, you know, how many questions we'd have.
I'm here to answer whatever I can. Absolutely.
Right. Very good. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm back to the gym.
All right, go.
Where are they playing?
We are playing TCA.
Oof.
Ooh. Yeah, when I left, we lost the C-team game. The JV game was tied at the end of the first quarter, so varsity starts in 30 minutes, so I better hustle back over.
You'll be there.
All right.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you all.
All
right. Next up is Ron, our chief financial officer, of course.
All right.
It's all yours.
So the first thing is checks over $5,000, and as I always start off, most expenses are typical monthly expenditures and are self-explanatory. Plus, there are payments for SPED contractual services, air filters, the audit, the CNA modular, the CNA supplies, and out-of-district services for SPED students. SPED contractual services, and then also out-of-district services for SPED students, and that's where we send SPED students out of district because we cannot provide the services that they need. So, any questions on the checks over $5,000? Okay. Next up, financial statements. These financials are for December, and so they do not reflect the budget that was approved at the last board meeting. The budget for these is back from the one that was approved back in June. The new budget numbers will be reflected in next month's financials for January. This report reflects activity through the end of December, 50% of the way through the fiscal year. General fund revenues after allocations are at 33.75%. And expenditures and transfers as a percentage of the budget are at 48.75% expended. While there are some cost centers within the general fund over the 50% benchmark, the total general fund is still under the 50% benchmark. As for the rest of the funds, they are about where we expected them to be at this time of year under the circumstances. And since these statements are through December, again, I'm just reiterating, they do not reflect mid-year changes made at the last board meeting, which the budgets for several of the other funds, including the general fund, are higher than what they are in this. Because if you can see, some of the expenditures are, I think, like food service are at 60%. So the budget has increased from the last board meeting, and so they'll be much more in line with what's expected at this time of year. Okay. Any questions on the financial statements? Okay. Next up, and I'm going to need a signature from either Rhonda or Craig, because the district and the finance office are going to have to go to something called positive pay. And what that basically means is every morning we or every day that we write a check, and we have the check register that's generated, and we usually cut checks twice a month on the 5th and the 20th. And every time we do cut checks, we have to send those checks, the check register, to the bank so that they can be approved to be paid or be honored by the bank. And so basically, we're going to have to, you know, just basically send in the check register that includes the amount of the check number, and who it's written to, and then that way it's proof that we're showing the bank that these are can be paid. And the reason we are going to this is because over the last month we have had some couple of instances of fraud from using our checks, or at least in one instance our check, in another instance somebody created a check using our account number, created their own check number, and sent it through. It was for $9,900, and it got honored. And at least by the bank that they sent it to, or they initially tried to, or they cashed it, our bank caught it and did not honor it. Called us, let us know, and they gave us basically two options to prevent something like this from happening again, and that is either change our account number, which is a nightmare because it'd take probably a year or two to get it everything straight with all their accounts over the years. And then secondly, we had another check, and we don't want to create a new account. When this positive pay is a better option. But moving on to the next case of fraud, we had sent a check to a company called AXA Equitable in New Jersey. Their office is in New Jersey. And this is the money that's collected from employees for their 403B or 401K in some instances. So what happened was, I don't know how that got intercepted. I don't know if it got stolen from AXA in their mailroom, or if it got stolen from the post office out there. But it got changed. The amount, the ones where you had the number, and then the ones you have the written number, both were erased and then completely changed. It was a check for $7,400, got changed to $14,000. And then also they also whited out who it was to. And for some reason the bank in New York honored it. I don't know if it was because it was a Mars.
So they're used to seeing whited out checks.
I guess.
No, yeah. They don't there.
It's called washing. And when a crook washes a check, you can't tell. When it comes into the bank, the bank can't tell because, you know, they're not the ones that are reconciling the checks, and you don't get your checks back anymore from the bank anyway. They keep those on files. So when somebody washes a check, they wash out all the information so it looks official, because everything then is typed in with the same font and all that kind of stuff, and it looks better.
Normally I would agree with that, but if you look
at
the...
Is that not true?
Well, if you look at the check, that because we get copies of the check every day that gets honored by the bank, and you can see on there all these little dots from where they washed the check.
Yeah, so...
And so we're thinking it is somebody who did a mobile pay, because it doesn't even say on the back of the check where it was cashed. So we found out it's from a bank in, like I said, in New York, Santander or something like that. I don't know if you ever heard of
Santander.
It's a Spanish bank.
Well, and they do loans, auto loans for people that normal banks would not probably take care of.
So, yeah, so we had a couple of fun instances of this check forgery. And
positive pay is a great program for somebody like us anyway. Yeah.
So it's, unfortunately, to get to make this happen, we need signatures from, like I said, either Greg or Rhonda, and I need 1, 2, 3 signatures. So at the end of the meeting, well, if you want to sign them now. So moving on from that one, next up I wanted to briefly talk about...
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I have a question. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Hey, so are you saying that if they were caught, so those checks were not cleared?
So the first check, the one that was created out of thin air, one of the banks, or the our bank caught the fraud. The other one, for some reason the other bank went ahead and honored it. Our bank didn't. They caught it. However, the second one, we caught it. And it actually was honored by our bank, and so we're working with them now to make sure that we get all of our recover all of our money from this.
And they will send it back to the bank that where it was processed. They'll just send it back, and they will get the money back to. They should anyway get the money back to our bank.
Right. Yeah, this latest one just happened at the end of last week, so. Next up is the HVAC contract. Caught a mistake on there, and that needed to be changed on the contract. And like my cover memo says, there was just a couple of areas. And I apologize for bringing it back again, but we need to reapprove it. So, and then finally, there's a discussion about a new position here. I'd like to talk about briefly, and this is a new operations and new operations manager. And so, what this job is going to be basically is they're going to be responsible for the oversight and day-to-day operations of transportation and operations, along with the current managers that they have there. They're also going to work with closely with both current directors to support their departments, such as ensuring they have enough resources, including both human and financial, and also help improve performance and efficiency, ensuring that focuses on internal and external customer support, providing direction and guidance, and manage and provide oversight of district projects. They will need a proven ability to effectively manage staff, not micromanage staff. Previous experience with fleet management would also be a preferred ability. And it will help me make sure that all projects get the proper attention that they need to get done. Any questions with that? It's a draft job description. It's not all encompassing. It gives some broad general direction on what we're expecting from this individual, and also there's some specific areas that we've focused on. Any questions?
Ron, what would you say the first three or four priorities would be for this person?
Oh.
I know you've been juggling.
Yeah, there are some current projects, major projects that we got going on. We got projects, the rooftop units at the high school. That's something that they are going to have to really focus on, because we do have the whole summer to get it done, but really you've only got about 2 months to get everything done. We could start staging. If we get the units in time, we could start staging them, the weekend of graduation. Well, we can't do that until after graduation's done, or before graduation's done, because the initial start date is May 23rd. They might have the units done before May 23rd, and they might could even possibly deliver them. but we can't have them delivered to the high school for staging purposes. And so that would be, that's going to be something that, would we prefer to have them staged there and have everything ready? Because if you don't take a shipment right away, and we know about all the problems with delivery throughout the U.S. and the world, we don't want to miss that window of delivery. So that's going to be a major concern. The next one is making sure that those two departments have enough support for them, and make sure that they have some, they get to know what the needs are, the personalities in those departments, and what, you know, and identify what are the biggest need for each one of those departments. And I guess thirdly, just trying to figure out how it operates, so they can make it more efficient and more and bring performance up. Not saying that there isn't good performance, but there's, as anybody knows, there's always room for improvement, the old saying goes. So look in those areas, focus on those areas. So those are the,
and hopefully
those would be
it
the,
won't be an issue. Whatever, in 2 months, but these are the kind of things that Ron has had to be responsible
right.
for. So, I've been affectionately informed about the leaks and the roof in Rank Creek. And it seems like we've had that roof repaired numerous times. And those are the kinds of things that happen as part of operations that don't really consider other responsibilities like SR3 reporting,
right.
like
yeah.
budget updates, right. and all of the financial work that our CFO has to do, including right now a lot of work with personnel. And so when there are personnel needs, they often land in Ron's lap and can take the better part of a half a day on an issue that isn't planned.
Yeah.
And just because there's a lot of staff between those two departments. And so that's why I think Ron mentioned that it's part staff resources and then other resources. So.
And I got to tell you, it's great that we're getting this money. Really is. I mean, we can do things we haven't been able to do in years with the money we're getting from the federal government. However, the bureaucratic strings that are attached to these is a nightmare. I sent in the application for the SR3, and I got, and there's a bunch of items on there. I didn't show you the whole budget, but it's a budget made up of over $1 million from both the main district and legacy. Well, I got 4 pages of guidance, or I should say, after the district send it in, they get reviewed by Colorado Department of Education personnel. And once that review is done, they send us feedback. And unfortunately, a lot of this feedback is, well, if you refer to section 210 of CRF 31-20, then these are the guidelines that you need to follow. And some of this stuff is so ridiculous, and it's a nightmare to try and navigate this, and unfortunately takes up a lot of time to make sure you do it all right. And so that's unfortunately where I've had to focus some of my attention, or has gotten distracted over the last year or so,
yeah,
right. because we started getting money back in March of 2020. So it's, and CDE is going to monitor all of the funds. When I say monitor, it's their version. They instead of saying audit, because everybody thinks audit, they don't want to scare you, but monitoring has got the same connotation, because they they come at it from a completely different point of view.
Well, that's almost ongoing. Audit is a one-time
situation.
Yeah. Monitoring is ongoing. Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. We just got monitored from the Gear/Rise grant. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
and so it's unbelievable the amount of scrutiny that is going into all this. And I understand that they want to make sure the money's being spent correctly, but what they're doing is creating so much. They're increasing our workload significantly because of that.
So along those lines, would this person be seeking out the funding opportunities and then preparing the grants for that, or?
Okay, so let's I cited BEST in there.
Okay.
As a grant. Now BEST, it comes around once a year. You have to decide, okay, what capital project? You identify a capital project that needs to get done that's safety related. Or, it's usually health and safety is their number one priorities. That's how come we got the grant money that we have over the past few years. And then what they'll do then is they'll go ahead and apply for it. And since I've gone through the application process for BEST, it takes a lot of work. There is a lot of homework that has to get done. I mean, not only is it a lengthy application, but there's a lot of work that goes into it. You have to get estimates, three estimates to for a project, and then there's a bunch of other things you have to get done. A lot of investigatory work that goes into writing these grants. And so there's going to be work not only preparing the grant, but then you have to then manage the grant. Once you get the money, you have to make sure everything is done by the book per state standards. So that's what they would be doing, seeking out the grants. And there might be other grants similar to that through some philanthropic organization that they might seek out.
Okay.
So...
And we got a safety grant. What was that one about? 250? The one that Duchesne did?
Yeah, I think there's. I think it's 270, something like that.
270. So it's safety related, and that's with the federal government. And that one's been probably over 2 years in the works, and we still haven't seen a dime, or I don't think spent a dime. It's been all bureaucracy and paperwork. Hundreds of hours, probably, right? Or dozens and dozens.
Yeah. Dozens, from both Shane, myself, and now Mike.
So, it's the best one is one that we've had before for roofs, and then also the wastewater treatment facility up at Sanini Hills. Those are the health and safety ones. Legacy Academy got one for safety for their kind of entryway to make it more secure. So, if we wanted to make our entryways more secure, we would certainly apply for a BEST grant. But it requires, like, for example, architectural drawings and estimates based on those architectural drawings of then what it would cost. I think we've had, at least three successful or four successful BEST grants?
I think three.
And we've had some that weren't, we had to go back, right?
Yeah. We got it, and one was tied to the passage of a bond,
right, and which the bond didn't
get. So, I mean, we got the grant, but it was tied to the passage. And so
there's really two grants that this person would be working with. One is implementation of the ESSER grant, like, for example, the 15 HVAC units at the high school. That's ESSER money. And then the other is going after grants to meet needs that haven't been fulfilled. And this is, it says draft on here, it's gone slower than we thought. We want to give you all some chance to think about it, so there's no need to take any action on it or whatever. If you have questions after this evening, feel free to reach out to any of us, Ken, Ron, or myself. We want to get this out to leadership, so the principals, technology, the people who would also be working with this person, either like in the buildings, the principals, they would be, in a sense, receiving the services of this person, having to work closely. People like Marty with technology or Mike in safety, they would be working in partnership. And we want to have them look at it and give their feedback to make sure that it meets their needs as well. So we would expect this to change between now and a time where it would be more considered final.
Midsummer?
No, we're moving much faster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Next meeting.
Okay.
Cool. Anything else, Ron?
That's it for me.
Nice. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Next up is our superintendent. 20 minutes, Douglas.
Okay.
Kim's not here, so.
Yeah, Kim, where are you? I need you to, you know, are you going to keep time?
Yeah, go.
Go.
Now you're supposed to say stop.
Yeah.
Well, I had hoped to have an update to COVID protocols basically ready to go tomorrow, but we have a couple of things to work out before we can do that, so we might need a couple more days. So we have a short message that would go out to parents saying we're making these slight adjustments to COVID protocols. Basically, they're relaxing some of our protocols, so it's not a matter of instituting new protocols. One just has to do with exposure the COVID virus at home and being able to get people that have been exposed at home back into school or work faster. And the approach is basically going to be if they don't have any symptoms and they're willing to test every other day, they can come back. They don't have to stay out, but they have to remain symptom-free and be willing to test and have a negative test. And they don't have to test every day. I don't know if any of you have tested very frequently, but it's kind of unpleasant, especially if you're younger. Yeah. So
that's more comfortable for me because I'm older. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. Because your sinuses are already like
messed up.
No, messed up.
Okay.
And the other one we're still working on. The third thing that would be a part of that message is a link to this. This is not this webpage. Jason's been working on now for a long week. A lot of time and effort put into it, but it's the link that we mentioned in the last message to more information on air quality, ventilation, filtration. And so I just wanted to show it to you to see so you could see what it's going to look like. It has all the previous messages there on the right. I'm just going to scroll down. You can kind of see, and they're all there from the beginning. And so people have an interest in the most current one or previous ones. It's more of an archive. And then under the picture, there is more information about air quality, ventilation, and filtration, because not only has that been important in keeping our students and staff safely in person through this whole pandemic, but also this school year without masks, without any requirements regarding vaccines, right? Some people have put in vaccine requirements, so we have not made decisions based on vaccine, have not required masks, but that's not because of any kind of position about being against or even for masks or vaccines. It's like those are individual requirements. And what we've tried to do, and we've proven that we can be successful, is to have institutionally do things, don't require individuals to do anything other than stay home if they're sick. Right? Stay home if you're sick, and then if people are willing, it's been helpful that they test. People have been very, you know, forthcoming about telling us to test. They report to us. We are obligated to report the results of tests to public health, and we've been told, and we know it's the law, but they'd like to remind us that we have to tell them. But that's been the main requirement of individuals. The other is behind the scenes. So instead of putting a filter on an individual, we put the filters in the building and in the room. Okay, so it's just a different approach to filtering. And we know that we've been able to minimize the spread of the virus in our schools. Going forward, that's important as around the state, as restrictions are lifted and people have a concern about how do we continue to be safe. Well, we know that like through this Omicron surge, through the Delta surge last fall, that we were able to operate without masks, with the simple request of stay home if you're sick, and really minimize the spread of the virus. So going forward, it not only helps with COVID, but other respiratory viruses that are in the air. And you know, it's pretty common sense that you know, schools are kind of a pretty cram for colds and flus and so forth. So there's research out there and studies that say that having HEPA air filters and having good filters in your air circulation and bringing in outside air has other beneficial impacts in terms of clarity of thinking, alertness, and other health effects that are illustrated in some of the articles that are here. So Jason went and took pictures just so that people could see when we talk about a HEPA air filter what it looks like. We talk here a little bit about what we've done in the research. Here's a picture of one of the CO2 monitors. You know what they look like, but when we talk CO2 monitors, you know, most people, what's a CO2 monitor, right? Even what's a HEPA air filter? They don't, they're not things that most of us are familiar with. This has some more specifics about what we've done in terms of, you know, the MERV 13 levels. This was all done back in July and August and September of 2020. And then we have some pictures here showing some of our HVAC units. And this is Mark, sort of working on them. Actually, these were Polaroids, they'd still be drying. This was today, right? These are some of the controls, Carrie. And Kim, you probably remember when Ron talked about, I think you were here, Kim, about upgrading the brains of our HVAC system. And so this is some of that. It's a more sophisticated central control ability with all of our machines. And that's some of what allowed us to respond like we did, because we had installed that. So it allowed us to have this comprehensive district-wide approach because we had these tools in place and we've worked out some of the kinks. We had more kinks and we continue to work out issues with the controls and the actual units because we're putting stresses on the units, especially given their age, that are having them show their age. And then down here you have research and resources, and they've been, Jason's organized them to academic. You can expand them and, you know, do it yourself, which we did make for our folks. It's so low cost. This is a NASA study on the HEPA air filters. They use them in their space shuttles and so forth. And a series of links and articles. So I think the way that he's got it set up, you can click and it'll take you sometimes to the PDF, or it'll take you to a website. So here you have the CDC reports. And what's curious is the CDC hasn't highlighted ventilation, but they do have a number of resources about the virus and ventilation and studies and schools and other places. But it's really difficult to find it. It's kind of often buried. It's not necessarily on their first page. They may just reference it in a list of bullets, ventilation, and so forth. We've got COVID in Colorado. So some of the CDPHE guidelines, the Colorado Public Radio report that highlighted what Elizabeth was doing, major media reports from a variety of sources, you know, that it is in the air, how to get it, how to prevent it, and then even in national resources, you've got Canada, New Zealand, United Kingdom, Spain, that have all, as national approaches, especially with education, put in air filtration units as well as CO2 monitoring. So that's that resource page. It's not live quite yet, but it can be both an archive of what we've done as well as a resource for people that are interested. It includes things for like what you can do at your home, in your home. The concepts are applicable to people's individual lives. They don't have to be institutional. So, for example, since last fall, when the numbers started going up, we've opened our and had our windows open in our house, a crack, almost continuously. And we probably run the heat a little bit more, but we've got a kid in college, another that's working in retail, and then a high schooler, all coming and going, who knows who they've been around. And, you know, my wife and I, we really don't want to be you know, taken out from our work. And so we just keep the windows open a little bit, keep that fresh air going. Simple thing. And so far, good. So that's it. I don't, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah. I like this, though. That's good. That's a good resource for parents, for all of us.
Oh, I didn't show. There's Larry. That's one of the MERV 13 filters. It looks like a home filter. It's just it's designed to filter to the level of microns that are the aerosols that carry the virus and other things. And then this is also the SR3 use of funds. This is something that for SR3 we're required to have on our website along with our plan. So, you know, these plans there, the messages were our plans. So both of these things serve a dual purpose for our community as well as the requirements to have the stuff posted for ESSER 3. I don't know if you can read that, but you've got four categories: academic learning loss, mental health supports, health and safety needs, and then continuity of operations. And those are all the ways that the ESSER monies, ESSER 3, either have been or are going to be spent.
When do you think that this will be done? Go live.
In the next couple days, probably.
Oh, okay. So short term. Good.
Yeah. One of the things that we decided to put, all the spaces have been monitored with in CO2. We actually include the data. So this goes back to August, and this the room number, and the CO2 reading, and who took it. And so this backs up the summary data that we've provided. And you can, so for anybody that's doubtful or that is interested, you know, there's all the numbers. And you can see, I'll point out, this was like shop class. This one was a little higher. 800 is still a reasonable number. Our goal is to be under 700. And so when the numbers were above 700, and it's not like 701, it often prompts more investigation, like, is everything working properly? So here, 1,100, 1,200 are still fine. Those are, but in a COVID environment, we want them lower. So I can't. These last two rooms have their dampers adjusted. And we found in some of the units that are going to be replaced this summer, we've made a number of adjustments. We can't get it below the 700, and that's just because the units are old. If you open the vents up too much, they let in too much cold air, you risk freezing of components of the system. So the advice of the experts when you can't get below 700 parts per million of CO2, is to add the HEPA air filters. Now, we have the HEPA air filters in all our classrooms regardless, but where we have higher, we've made sure that there's ample HEPA air filters in those rooms if we've been able to get the HVAC system to bring the numbers down. And we've done the gymnasium when there's boys and girls, A, B, and C teams, the auxiliary gym and the main gym packed, the hospitality room, when there's been concerts, middle school, high school, offices, health rooms, etc. So I'm just going to scroll kind of fast just to show you. I mean, there's just a wealth of data here. And just to give you a sense, you can see, I'm going to go faster now, this is the amount of data. So when we say that we've been tracking this and watching this data, we've been keeping up on this. You see how much data there is. I mean, I think maybe we've underestimated with 1,500. I have to maybe recount.
This is great. It shows the effort that you put into into the solution you put in place.
And not just numbers, too. But
exactly.
Specifics about, a game on Tuesday because the snow game was not attended. Well, just notes in there that help explain.
And then because we've been monitoring all of the cases, and then if there's any likelihood or possibility that there was spread in the school, we then investigate it, and we're able to look at this, and we're able to see what the CO2, if we didn't have it already, we often would move a CO2 monitor to a space where somebody was that had COVID, and then see, does anybody else in that space get it? And very often the case was, no, they don't. And we've been able to, in the couple of cases where there was what we believe to be spread within a classroom, there was one at Singing Hills, there was one at the high school, be able to go back and look at these and have these numbers inform us in terms of what happened. So if the air circulation, the ventilation, everything didn't keep it from spreading, what happened? And as we've said, in two of the cases, it's because there were two individuals. Like, let's just say the two of you had the virus. We're sitting here, and then the three of you are actually in a class, and then the two of you go to a class, and then the two of you have a class after that, and then you're with somebody else. And when there were two people, and they were in close proximity, that's where we saw that it happened. So what we've suggested to teachers and so forth is, and students, but they don't really the same. Like, don't sit with your friends all day long.
Yeah.
No. So every time I think that kind of we're finding our way out of all this pandemic, I don't know, news. I hear things that there's people like an article last week I showed Jason. One article was Jefferson County removing its mask mandate. CDPHE telling everybody they need to keep their masks on. CDPHE just updated its guidance, and they said the schools should still continue to use masks even if local public health doesn't require them. Have you not been listening that the issues? So my hope is that the success that we've had, this data, this information can help people both that are here or that are thinking of coming here to understand what we're doing. We're not anti anything. We're all about safety and being proactive, but it's proof. The least that the individual has to do and the more that we can do, that's a better balance. Questions. And then the last thing is, we wanted to make you aware, and when I say we, especially Kristen and I, but the whole HTI team, is we're in the third year of this grant. There are how many districts? Eight districts?
Eight.
There's eight districts that have different levels of this grant. And every district has gone in a slightly different direction. Every district has done a graduate profile, but we've done a lot of work with internships, for example. Not every district has done internships. And part of the design for the third year of, which is an implementation year, it's also about sustainability of these projects, is for districts to go visit other districts, to do site visits. So I've gone on two already. They've just been day visits, one to Clear Creek and the other to Fremont. And there's an expectation that we go to one or two of them. We don't have to go to all of them. So I think ours is Holyoke. Mm-hmm. And so we'll send folks out to Holyoke. But our site visit, when people come to us, including the HTI team and then other districts, all the districts are invited, but there's a couple that are required to make sure that there's an even distribution, that everybody goes to at least one or two districts. So we wanted to make you aware, so if you're available part of that day or all of that day, that you can observe or be a part. We really want to accomplish two things with it. This is high level. One is we want to show everybody that comes on the visit, so that's the HDI team and other districts, we want to show them what we've done. We don't want to talk about it. We want to show them as much as possible. Illustrate. So Jason and Kristen have been doing a lot of work on photographs and videos, trying to capture things that that we could tell them about. But for example, some of the internships, and get the company doing the internship and the student, and we have videos of that, so we could show a 2-minute video, and then have them here to do some Q&A. We want to potentially have them go to one or two of the schools when they're doing their assembly for the whole school, talking about one of the graduate profile characteristics and how they do it, have them see it. Bring in people that have been partners and have them talk rather than us talk. So showing as much as possible. And
that's awesome.
Well, that's probably the main thing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So we don't want it to be a small group of people talking, but a lot of people that have been involved in different aspects. There will have to be some telling, but we want to try to illustrate it as much as possible. So.
And they are going to have an opportunity to see a lab in the CNA class.
Oh, good.
That's the piece that you guys will see.
So the CNA program has a classroom component, and then it has a lab component. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
The setup, you know, the beds, they have their scrubs, they have all their stuff. And right now we're thinking that the site visit would probably start at Singing Hills, move to the middle school, and then end at high school. And it's not a large event, in my opinion, maybe 20, 25 people.
Maybe 20. Yeah.
So it's not a big event. It's you know, like a large with a large audience.
This is Thursday.
Yep.
7th. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm gonna try.
Kim, you can say stop now.
Okay, I think we can move along now.
All right. Well, that's good.
Okay. Kim wants to remind me of something else that's not listed here. In terms of some of the flexibility that has been used by HR on a very limited basis, you guys approve a salary schedule for certified and classified. And so every year, if we recommend any adjustments to it, we bring it to you guys in the spring. And then once that's approved, that's what we operate off of. A few years back, we requested that the number of years of experience for somebody coming into the district be moved from 10 years to 15 years. Because what we were finding is that, especially people that had experience in districts and they were paying more, that there was a double disincentive to come to Elizabeth. And that didn't really serve us. So we did two things. We increased the number of years that could be counted to 15, And then if there was anybody in the district, I think there were maybe just a couple that maybe had come under the old regime, but were paying, say, at 13 years, but had more experience outside. They'd been limited. We moved them to the appropriate number. Right? I think really only twice have we made an exception for that, where we've given somebody more than the 15, and it's been for the hard to fill, and it's when they've had additional experience. And just wanted to say that how we have operated and want to continue to operate is that we would do that, we would make that exception, and then we would tell you that we've made it.
Right.
And we, I think we just did it for one classified and one certified. And when we did the certified, we looked at all the implications for like other teachers teaching the same thing, and what were they being paid, and what were their years of experience, and were there any potential inequities in terms of how people were being paid. And we couldn't find any, and I think there were no issues. But generally that's the protocol that we would use. But if we feel that it's a hard to fill position and we're struggling with that, and part of it is because they have more experience, then we'll let you know that we made an exception to the 15 years, and then we'll tell you, and that'll come across in your request for either probably the consent agenda or consent events.
Yeah, if I could just give one tiny example. Recently, we had a new student come into Running Creek Elementary who's blind, and we found a very, very experienced special education paraprofessional who has worked in the past with blind students, and she came in with a ton of years of experience. So that was one area where we feel like that's an example of where we bring in somebody.
Running beyond the scale,
yeah.
The existing scale.
Well, beyond that step 50.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's just an example. But again, just as with the stipends that I talked about earlier, these are rare. These are even more rare than the stipends.
Yeah, only done
just a couple. Yeah. Any time we've had this step 50 as the max, which has been a number of years.
I think moving to the step 15 really helped a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
Because we have a lower salary schedule, not for everybody, but for people that are coming to us from larger districts. It just it's helped.
Cool.
All right.
Good. Good, Kim. You guys have any questions for Douglas? All right, let's move on. We see we do not have public comment. So we move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve 9.1 through 9.5?
So moved.
Second.
All right, roll call please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, moving on to the action items. 10.1, can I get a motion to approve, ratify, inclement weather closure February 3rd, 2022? Motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Just for the new board members, when we close for emergency, and weather is one of those, it requires board ratifying that decision, because you approved a calendar, and so if we are not going to have school on a day when you approve the calendar, it needs to be ratified.
All right. Did we get a second on that? We did, didn't we? Okay. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Motion to approve 10.2, disposition of district property.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, motion to approve 10.3 EHS new courses for 2022-2023.
So moved.
Second.
All right, any discussion?
I can't believe that it's going to be 2022-23.
I can't either. Okay, all right, roll call, please. Yeah.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfiller?
She's coughing.
Oh.
Yes.
Sorry.
Poor kid.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Motion to approve 10.4, requests for retirement transition years.
So moved.
So moved.
So we'll...
First, second.
Okay. You're second, Kim. All right. Any discussion? No. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. 10.5, motion to approve amended HVAC replacement project.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Brumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
All right, motion to approve 10.6, first and final reading of revised policies GBGG-R-2, staff paid leave classified, and GDD, vacations and holidays.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. All right, motion to approve 10.7, first reading of new policies. Roll call. Oh, I'm sorry. Roll call.
Sorry.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay. Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay, now 10.7, first reading of new policies, GBGL, staff victim leave. Motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay. And 10.8, motion to approve first reading of revised policies, BID/BIE, school board member, compensation, expenses, insurance, liability, and GBGG, staff paid leave.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Firmfiller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. With that, there are no discussion items. Board of Education Planning, next board meeting is scheduled February 28th, 2022.
But we're planning on the 26th.
That is separate. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So with that, I adjourn this meeting. It is 7:26 p.m.